The Go-Ahead Boys in the Racing Motorboat by Ross Kay. Chapter 4, The Lost is Found. "He isn't there," exclaimed George gleefully. "I'm safe on my dinner." "I believe you're right," said Fred in a low voice, after he had glanced along the dock several times, searching for his missing friend. "Of course I'm right," said George. "I'm always right. That's the reason why your fond parents wanted me to go with you on this trip. Somebody has to go along who understands modern life. So I reluctantly gave up my own convenience and came along to look after these poor, benighted Go-Ahead Boys." "Keep quiet a minute, George," said Grant. "We all appreciate your kindness. Just now, however, I would rather see String than hear you." "Not seeing String, you must listen to me," laughed George again. "Let me see. I don't buy the dinner, and it seems to me that one or the other of my friends agreed to provide one if I was mistaken about John." "No such agreement was made," declared Fred sharply. "Is that so, Grant?" demanded George, turning to the remaining member of the party. "It certainly is," declared Grant. "You were the only one to make the offer." "Then I suppose I shall have to put up with it," said George disconsolately. "Now, as soon as we get everything shipshape, we had better go up to the hotel." "Shall we take our bags or send down for them?" inquired Grant. "If we don't take them, someone else will," said Fred quickly. "We can lock up everything else, but we don't want to leave anything on board that can be taken away." "Just as you say," said Grant, as taking his bag in his hand, he stepped quickly to the dock. Already a small assembly had gathered and was commenting upon the beauty of the little motorboat. The pride of Fred had been satisfied so many times throughout the day that he was not unduly moved now by the words which he overheard. In a brief time, he and his two companions were walking up State Street and soon secured rooms for the night in their hotel. An hour later, when they entered the dining room, they were amazed to behold their missing friend John seated at a small table, at which there were three places beside the one he had taken. For a moment, the three Go-Ahead Boys stopped and gazed in amazement at him, and then, without a word being spoken, all three silently advanced to the table which he had reserved, and apparently without recognizing the presence of their friend, at once seated themselves. "Why don't you say something?" demanded John, a grin appearing on his face as he spoke. "I'm going to say something in a minute," said George. "I want to read through this program first to find out what I'm to have for my dinner." "Program is a good word," said Grant soberly. When George has such a chance to get a square meal, he always has a regular program mapped out. "That's all right," retorted George without glancing up from the menu card. "Why don't you say something?" demanded John again. "My friend," said Grant soberly, gazing a moment at John as he spoke. "Words are not adequate to express our feeling. How is it with you?" "I'm fine," said John. "Why don't you ask me where I have been and how I came to Albany?" "You're in Albany, and that is enough to satisfy all the curiosity we have," said Grant. "It doesn't satisfy me," said John. "When three fellows run away from you and leave you high and dry in a city like Poughkeepsie, why, all I can say is that..." "That's enough to say, Johnny. That will do," interrupted George, waving his right hand at his friend. "You are simply mistaken," said John, the grin appearing on his face once more. "I want to tell you that whether you want it or not, you are going to hear from me, and in more ways than one." "Threaten people live long," spoke Fred. "At the same time, String, you'll have to own up that we waited for you as long as we thought we could before we started for Albany. I didn't want to be out of the dark in the Black Growler." "I appreciate all your kind feelings," laughed John. "Now I want you to sympathize with me. I had gone to half a dozen different places, doing my best to select certain good things for our luncheon. I had a choice assortment, too, let me tell you. Why, Pop's eyes would have popped out if he had seen what I had obtained. But alas, when I came down to the dock, I saw the Growler running up the river as if he was trying to get away from me." "Did you come up by train?" inquired Fred. "I did not come up by train," retorted John, speaking deliberately. "How did you come?" asked George, interested now in spite of his effort to appear indifferent. "Didn't you see the aeroplane?" asked John. "Aeroplane? No, we didn't see any," said Grant quickly. "Well, I didn't either," said John. "So that's one way that I didn't come." Oh, leave him alone, said George. He's just bursting with his story. He wants to tell us, and we shan't be able to stop him. So let's have our dinner, and you may rest easy that before we're done, you'll know all of John's story and some beside. Tomorrow it will grow big and fast. It's like the pumpkins out in South Dakota. They say that a man has to be on horseback when he plants them. How's that? Laughed John. Why, the vines grow so fast that the only way he can escape it is to put his horse into his best paces. Even then, they don't always escape. What happens if they're overtaken? Said John. Oh, the pumpkin vines grow right around them and cover them up and choke off their wind and do other various stunts. Fine, fine, laughed John. My story isn't growing like that. Though, let me tell you, this story is true. It's a complete narrative of truthful John. I was about to turn back and make inquiries when I could get an express train for Albany. When what should I see coming off the dock but the varmint too? As soon as the people on board saw me, they immediately began to urge me to come with them. They had seen the growler just pulling out and leaving me in my unfortunate plight. I guess they suspected what you had in the basket, laughed Fred. That may be, acknowledged John. At all events, it saved them buying a good spread. For they took me on board right away, and we trailed you all the way up to Hudson. I tell you, Pee-wee, it's a comfort to ride in a good boat. That varmint, too, can travel. Oh, I don't know how many knots an hour. Can she beat the black growler? Inquired Fred anxiously. Beat her? Beat her, retorted John. Why, you would think the black growler was standing still. The varmint can pull away from her so fast. I don't believe that, said Fred, shaking his head. Well, you will have to, for they're going to the same place we are. They have entered her in the motorboat races, and as she belongs to the same class that your tub does, you will have a fine chance to see her win the cup. That's about the only chance you'll have, too, in my opinion. John winked at George and Grant, who immediately, in doleful tones, expressed their sympathy for Fred. It's too bad, declared George, after a fellow's father has given him such a boat, asked the black growler, to find out that it doesn't stand any show in the race. Now, if you had found that out before you had bought the boat, Fred, just think how much money, time, labor, trouble, perplexity, sleeplessness, loss of... Never that, broke in Grant, shaking his head. All the other things, yes, but loss of appetite, never. Just look at him. John insisted upon relating his experiences and increased the interest of his friends in spite of their efforts to appear indifferent, when he said there were three young people on board the varmint who were expecting to spend the summer on an island near Fred's grandfather's, and were also confident that the boat race was to be the supreme event of the summer. In spite of this declaration that he was not anxious, it was plain to his friends that Fred was somewhat cast down by the glowing reports which his companion had brought concerning this swift rival motorboat. Tomorrow we'll be on the Radiant Canal, said Grant. Now then, I want to know if there's any fellow on this crowd who knows anything about the world's great canals. We don't know anything, said Fred. We heard you talking this morning, but how much of what you said is true, nobody knows, not even yourself. It's all true, retorted Grant. As I told you, I wasn't willing to start on a trip like this without knowing something about what I was doing. When do you start on that new line? Laughed George. Doesn't make any difference, said Grant. Now the Panama Canal, for example, belongs to the United States, doesn't it?
It does, acknowledged Fred.
Well, now, as a future citizen of this country, just tell me between what places that canal extends. If there is one fellow in this crowd who can give me the right answer, I will pay for the dinner for all the go-ahead boys. Panama, said John promptly. Panama what? Retorted Grant sharply. Why, the Panama Canal is located in the city of Panama, said John, somewhat abashed by the manner of his friends. That's good, as far as it goes, said Grant. But I want to know if you know where the other end of the canal is located. The three boys looked blankly at one another, and for an instant no one spoke. The canal extends between Colón and the city of Panama, said Grant hastily. That's exactly what I was going to say, said George. You took the words right out of my mouth. You did it so that you wouldn't have to pay for the dinner tomorrow. I guess every one of us knows where the Panama Canal is. All right, said Grant. I'll take your word for it, if you'll tell me how long it is. Again, there was silence among the go-ahead boys as they glanced foolishly at one another. Of course, every young American is sure to know such simple facts as that, said Grant condescendingly. But for my own satisfaction, I am willing to state that it is exactly 50½ miles long. How deep is it? Said Fred sharply. It is about 41 feet, answered Grant promptly. Of course, in the lakes it is deeper than that, and it is from 300 to 649 feet wide. Why, I don't believe, he continued, that some American boys I happen to know, although they pass right through it, could tell me how long the Sault Ste. Marie Canal is. I have a dim suspicion, too, that they don't know what it connects. I know that, said George. It connects Lake Superior with St. Mary's River and Lake Huron. I'm glad you're right once in your life, said Grant. Now tell me how long that canal is. I can't tell a lie, Mr. Schoolmaster, said George. The Sault Ste. Marie Canal is 2 miles long. All right. I don't have to buy the dinner tomorrow, said Grant. There may be some other things you'll have to do, though, said John. You're not done with me yet. No, sir, he added emphatically. That is not all. End of chapter. Read by Jorge Acosta for Lit2Go. On the web at fcit.usf.edu.